According to the researcher, the crab climbed a tree and attacked a seabird in its nest that was on a branch close to the ground. The crab broke the bird's wing, causing it to fall out of the nest. Then it took the bird with its claw, breaking the other wing. Then it called his buddies like, hey! And a bunch of crabs showed up and ate the shit out of it. Darwin Award right here. No, this kidding. Is the crab is up in the ante. His bird game is strong. The bird on the other side, you know, first prize for the bird and the Darwin Award is you got eaten by a crab, son. What were you? You're a bird. Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmari and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
So, I have some, this is called News from Elsewhere.
News from Elsewhere?
Not my words, BBC. Elsewhere.
So, okay, BBC-centric.
Yeah, it's BBC, elsewhere. It says okay. Elsewhere. Apparently, a Portuguese trawler netted a what's thought to have to be a prehistoric shark. Mm. Now, this, I know, it's exciting.
Oh, hooray, hooray.
So, it's called a, what is it called? Portuguese scientists have captured a quote, shark from the age of dinosaurs off the coast. It's a rare frilled shark, and they were trawling. So they're working on a project to minimize unwanted catches in commercial fishing.
Okay.
So they're trying to think about ways that they can use fishing trawlers, because you still have to eat fish, and people have to be able to support themselves, their livelihood.
Okay.
But they want to make sure that they're only getting the fish that they want, and not just grabbing everything that's in the ocean.
Yeah, because why do you have to have everything?
Yeah, so they're experimenting with ways to do this.
A better net.
A wider net that if it does catch things that you don't want, it doesn't hurt those animals in any way. So they pulled up.
It must be exciting though when you
pull it up,
you're like, I don't know what I'm going to get in here. Yeah.
So this is, they're calling a living fossil. Remains of this kind of shark have been dated back to 80 million years.
Oh, no.
And no one's seen one in a very, very, very long time. It was 1.5 meters long. This is 5 feet long. It's like long and thin. It was caught at a depth of 2,300 feet.
Wow.
It has a long, snake-like body. So it's a long, it's a 5 foot long snake, but it's pretty big around. It's little known in terms of biology or environment, so they don't know anything about it. It lives at great depths. So they caught it at 2,300 feet, mm-hmm. but who knows how much further it goes down, right? It's rarely caught, and then when it is caught, they usually don't have a chance to bring it into a scientific environment. Mm-hmm. Either it's died or they throw it back or whatever. And there's almost no footage of this thing.
Wow.
So they have no idea how it moves, where it goes, what it does, nothing. Professor Castro of the University of Algarve told the BBC that the shark gets its name from the frilled arrangement that has 300 teeth on its mouth. So I'll show you.
300 teeth?
I'll show you the picture.
Oh. Wow. It looks like a...
like a giant snake.
Like a giant snake. Kind of like the thing in Stranger Things that...
Oh, I haven't seen it. That's okay. I know that it's in there.
Okay. That bit.
So Katie's saying it looks like the thing from Stranger Things. I say...
Stranger Things 2.
Stranger Things 2. Yeah. Sorry. I say it looks like one of the eels that's in The Princess Bride.
Okay.
That kind of thing. For those of you who haven't seen Stranger Things 2. So the teeth, the arrangement of the teeth are frilled, and they allow it to trap squid, fish, and other shark when they lunge out to get it.
Now, was this alive and still...
It was alive.
It was alive. So they could have submerged it in some...
Well, they have. They've submerged it, and I think they're going to try to run some tests or something like that on it. It looks fascinating, and they say that this might have been one of the things that inspired the stories about sea serpents. Like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a 5 foot long snake, basically, as far as anyone could tell,
right,
with a gigantic mouth with 300 teeth in it. Yeah, that might inspire some legends about sea monsters, sure. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, what were they doing casting nets that low? Were they looking for things like this?
Well, I guess this is how trawlers work.
I don't know
much about trawlers.
I don't know either.
And I didn't know that they cast nets that deep into the water.
That's deep.
Extremely deep.
I don't think that they're... What are they looking for?
They're catching fish.
That's so far down.
I know. I feel... See, I think you're like me. I feel like the fish. No, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I feel like, you know, give them a chance. Yeah. Like, if they're that low, leave them alone.
Yeah.
Get the guys on top.
Do you really want to go down that far for something and try to eat it?
Yeah, but imagine if they caught this thing.
It's going to eat you.
And they have been able to check out and look at it. Think about all the other things that they catch and just throw away.
Yeah.
Like, how much of, you know.
Quite frankly, if I were on a boat and I saw just your run-of-the-mill fish, I'd be like, I don't really see live fish. So I'd be like, that's a prehistoric monster. It's like, no, it's a mackerel.
Yes. But if you were to see, because I grew up, you know, seeing a lot of fish, but not very big. And then you see things like a grouper that can swallow a shark.
Yeah.
If I saw something like that in the water, I'd get the hell out of the water.
Groupers are delicious.
But these things are bigger than us.
Yeah.
They could eat us.
Well, let's stick to us eating them.
Let's stick to us eating them. And on that note, what do you have?
Well, I have a listener mail.
Awesome. So if you would like to interact with us via the internet, you could always follow us on Twitter at HeyYouKnowIt, or you could email us at HeyYouKnowIt@gmail.com, and we will get back to you. If you send us anything, we will not say your name on the air.
That's right.
We will not share your email with anybody. We will simply enjoy
the bounty that you share with us. So this is from Michael F.
Yay, Michael F.
Yes. Just heard the episode about the lady who wants to cheat with her boss and the other lady whose brother is divorcing his wife but wants to come for Christmas.
Okay.
That was these people, right?
Several, yeah.
I figure I'd find some more weird cheating ones because you guys give the bomb answers to these idiots.
Oh, nice. Thank you. So this is advice on advice?
Hey, yes. Happy holidays. Love the show. And thank you so much for always providing guaranteed entertainment.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Michael F.
So let me give a nice little intro then. We're going to go right into advice on advice. Advice on advice is a segment where we find advice on the internet, or Michael F. does and sends it to us. And we like to give our take on that.
Yeah. So here we are. Advice on advice.
Yep.
Dear Amy, my 41-year-old son cheated on my daughter-in-law for the third time.
Huh?
And then left her and my 6-year-old grandson.
With you.
They were together for 20 years.
Okay.
I adore my daughter-in-law and I'm heartbroken. My son told me he never really loved her, but stayed with her because he didn't want to break her heart. And because she was such a great wife, mother, and all-around good person.
She was taking care of everything for him, basically.
Yeah. I'm so ashamed and disappointed in him.
I would be too.
I'm very close with my daughter-in-law. She says she couldn't have gotten through this without me. We talk every day. Although I still love my son very much, naturally, I don't even want to talk to him right now. He already wants us to meet the woman he left my daughter-in-law.
Who?
I can't imagine meeting her, and I saw her picture on Facebook. Honestly, she looks like a prostitute.
I'm not even sure what that means. I think people don't know enough prostitutes to make that kind of determination, but sure.
I'm 100% on my daughter-in-law's side. She didn't deserve this, and neither did my wonderful grandson. I raged at my son when I first found out. Now he calls me and tells me how guilty he feels. Although I'm civil to him, I don't even want to hear his voice right now. Will I ever get over this anger with my son?
That must be disappointing. I'm assuming this woman did not, or tried not to raise her son to do things like that. She clearly loves the daughter-in-law and the grandchild. So I would say, before we even get into the advice, that you don't have a son right now. You have a daughter.
Yeah.
And you have a grandchild.
And that's it.
And you should be happy with that.
Right.
Your son sounds like a dog. And he's expecting you to go along with this, to watch you, you know, trample on another woman what does look like a prostitute mean?
So he's 41, was with the other wife for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So basically take care of him for
He's getting a new family.
That's and now he's like in his 40s, like, got it.
He wants to get a new...
And he said he never loved her, but stayed with her because he didn't want to break her heart. Like, he was such a gem.
No, he stayed with her because she was probably cooking, cleaning, raising his kid, and maybe gave him a nice life.
So, he was raised a certain way, than to expect this from a woman.
I guess, maybe.
Without having to give anything in return.
Possibly. Or he wasn't raised that way, and he just has figured this out on his own. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Because the mom seems, like, legitimately upset, and... is willing to, like, she wants to hear, get rid of your son. Mm. Don't talk to him anymore. That's what she wants to hear, I think. All right, so let's hear the advice.
Okay.
So but she sounds like she's done.
This is son, Furious Mother. Dear Furious, I applaud your expression of friendship and concern for your daughter-in-law, but you should do this without becoming too intimately involved.
Why?
Your daughter-in-law is lucky she can talk to you about this, but this will become a problem for you when you finally get to the point where you can communicate with your son again. And you will get to that point.
Really? I wouldn't. I'd be like, don't come around here no more. Tom Petty. Wonderful artist.
It's appropriate to rain down the wrath of Mom upon your son's sorry head. There's no reason to shield him from your opinion. There is also no reason to spend time with his new squeeze before you are ready. Though stalking her on Facebook is hardly mature behavior.
That didn't sound stalk. I bet you the son was like, she's on Facebook.
Yeah.
Or his friends.
Or he said, look, this is her on Facebook and showed the phone.
Or the mom and the son are on Facebook together.
Yeah. Over time, however, your anger will not help this family. It may actually stoke the flame and extend
family?
Challenges. Be supportive, be understanding, and do your best to be a true friend to this entire family. Urge them to pursue mediation with a professional.
Wait, what family? There's no family anymore. You have a daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
And a grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
And a piece of shit son.
Mm-hmm.
What's the problem? what's the problem? You now have a wonderful daughter and a grandchild.
Yeah.
You could thank your son for that. You could tell him to keep it rolling.
Yeah. You now have to get on board with this girlfriend.
Yeah. But why does she have to choose her son over the daughter-in-law? Yeah. How's that going to work?
Do you think that after a while she's going to be like, you know,
I don't know.
My son, I still, you know, I have to get past this.
I mean.
He cheated for the third time.
Wait. So he was with he was deceiving that woman for 20 years. I would say give it 20 years. It was fine for him. It should be good for her.
Right.
That would be really difficult for me to, I don't have kids, but I can't imagine that level of, like, how could I trust that person again?
Yeah.
Because I feel like when, I'll say this. Yeah, I have broken off some friendships with people who have displayed that kind of behavior. Yeah. That's just not something I want to be around. That's not something I'm interested in.
If they're serial cheaters, what if they make a mistake once in a while?
It's the reaction to it.
Yeah.
And what they do. This isn't just a mistake, though. He said the third time.
Yeah, the third.
The third time that he's mistreated his wife and his son. He's cheated on his family.
Right.
Right? He was with this woman for 20... He wasted 20 years of her life pretending that he cared about her, he says. He didn't want to hurt her. But how long has it been since they've been apart? Now he wants to be coming around with some new woman. And I'm also questioning what kind of person he is if his mother is this... You know what I mean? His mom sounds like she wants an out.
Right.
I don't know. How necessary is this son?
I still love my son very much naturally, but I don't even want to talk to him right now.
Don't. Maybe try later. This is a thing I think people don't consider about infidelity.
Yeah.
Is that it's not just affecting the person who's being cheated on. Now it's affecting like the larger family, right? Now his mom, because he's cheated, his mom is now disappointed, you know, with him to the point where she doesn't even want to deal with him at all.
Right.
I hope it was worth it. I don't know. I mean, I guess in the long run, maybe they should try to find a way to come to a common ground. But this is, you know, give it some time, I guess. Mm. I'm not a very good person because I'm not, you know, I'm not a religious person and I'm not about forgiveness. And there's so many people in the world that I don't need to forgive you. I can just find somebody else.
Right.
But it is, it is her son. I know, it's a weird one. And
it's a weird one, but.
I mean, this new woman, is this the woman that he was cheating with? Where's she? Where are these women that he's cheated with?
I don't know where the other two are, but this is, I guess, number three.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, wonder what he has going on.
And I also wonder what a prostitute looks like.
Yeah, right.
When people say that you look like a whore, or I've heard my friends like, I don't want to look like a whore. I'm like, well, what does that look like?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Exactly.
What
so
is that?
Also, that reflects on the mother and her and her attitude.
Did you say that is the daughter-in-law homely?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Is she a painted lady, this new one?
This new one. And the other one doesn't even do highlights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's just flat, natural hair color. You know, her hair color is just known as mousy brown. You know?
No, I could see, like, the mother, look, you know, with families, you're going to get mad with this kind of stuff, and your relationship is going to change.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be with him right now, but she eventually is going to have to talk to her son again.
What if he keeps doing this? Then what?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna defer to you on this one. Katie is much more family oriented than I am.
I raged at my son when I first found out. Now he calls me and tells me how guilty he feels.
So
what is he gonna do then? But he feels guilty, but he wants to do
okay.
it.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is interesting to me, because I'm such a hard bitch. So all of these people now who are coming out about harassment and all this kind of stuff, they want to apologize. Mm-hmm. Should anyone accept their apologies? Or should they just have to live with it for the rest of their life, the shame and the ostracization? Because if you start forgiving everybody mm-hmm. for these kind of things, it's like, well, then what's the point?
Just forgive and then, like, let them go about yeah, their business.
Because the victim doesn't get that.
Yeah.
Like, that apology does not change what you've done.
We're talking mainly, let's talk about Louis C.K.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
All right, this just happened.
Yeah.
Right, just today. I skimmed his apology.
Oh, I didn't even care. I've heard from so many people that I used to do comedy with about things like this, and nobody would believe them. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit about his apology.
Yeah.
He has his money.
He has his money.
He has his fame. He has a lot of fan base that will like him no matter what. Because mm-hmm. we know there are people out there who don't care.
Yes, exactly. It's like the people that voted for Trump have mm-hmm. that kind of thing where they're going to push.
The people who still like Woody Allen and work with Woody
yeah,
Allen.
Because they'll push all that aside.
Because they'll push all that aside. So you can have those people, but you can take your apology and shove it up your ass as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't do anything. How are you going to, are you going to go out there and apologize to each person?
I think,
how about writing some checks?
I want to go back and reread the apology, but he said something at the very end, I'm going to go away and really think about what I've
done.
So
what?
Go away.
Go away where? Are you going to go on vacation?
You're going to take all your money and go away somewhere and what?
And then what?
Do
those women, where do they go? Why don't you send them on vacation?
I'm sorry. He's like, yes, I could have helped them. They were people who looked up to me. And
you
I could help them.
You can still help them.
Yeah.
You have a lot of money. Think about all of those victims who are out there. I'm not saying that money is the answer for everybody, but this is America.
Yeah.
And that's how we resolve our issues, right. Damages.
Right.
Right? So you need to make amends. But why make a public apology for, did he whip his dick out in public? So why is the apology public?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Nothing. You don't have to apologize to me. I never liked this comedy anyway. I always thought he was kind of sleazy. And hey, guess what?
Guess what he is. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I think that these apologies, I need to see, you know, I guess I'm an Old Testament kind of person if I was going to be thinking. I need to see him hurt.
You want to see him suffer?
Yeah, I want to see him suffer.
What is the right...
I don't know. It's not up to me. I don't know. Maybe we should ask a victim.
So when you're a victim of this kind of thing, then you're put in a position where you're just like, You learn that you are going to get smacked down. You're not going to go anywhere unless you're humiliated. When people do that, when they want to masturbate and show their penises to people who don't want to see it,
mm-hmm.
it's about they get off on the fear.
Yeah,
still
the fear, the power,
and the shame, and they like that. They like that reaction.
So
that's what they're looking for.
I feel like that kind of person. I mean. This goes back to what we talked about before, like people who say racist things and they're like, I'm sorry I said it. I'm sorry, I don't care. Mm-hmm. You dropped the N-bomb on me and there's no apology for that. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be around you. I'm going to tell everybody I know and you have to deal with that. Just like I have to deal with the racism. You have to deal with it.
Right.
Personally, I don't think I should have to deal with it. I didn't do anything wrong. These women didn't do anything wrong. He's caused them a problem.
Yeah.
That's where all of our sympathy should go. Nothing for him.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
He's like, he just wants to. Like, it's like, I apologize, let's get back to normal and go about business as usual.
I don't know, and many people disagree with me, my friends, people who I care about disagree with me on the stance, but I don't see what an apology is for. An apology is good if, like, you know, I broke something in your apartment, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm going to fix it.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to make it right. I owe you some money. But for things like this, what is an apology? So I think the people who do these things have to think about that. Like, what is it that they can do? And if the answer is nothing.
So if you didn't break a material thing, if you hurt somebody's feelings, if you cause them emotional
this
pain.
This isn't just hurting people's feelings,
I'm just talking in general. I'm talking about the intangible things.
I mean, you could try.
If you damage somebody emotionally and in that way.
I guess you could try.
And you realize that you did that, then you say you're sorry, but what can you do?
What can you do? I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, most of us try not to get ourselves in that kind of situation because I don't know what mm-hmm. I can do. I don't know if I did something like that to somebody. All right, I would never. But if I did something like that to somebody, there's nothing I can do to remove that. I can't take it back. I can't make that person feel safe again. I can't take away all the shame and the fear that these women have been harboring for years. They outcried. Nobody cared.
And the opportunity taken away.
Yeah.
The financial.
I mean, one of the reasons I stopped doing comedy in clubs is because this whole rape culture got so into the open mics, into the club scene. And it's not just the comics. It's also the bookers and the nasty people who run the clubs. Like, this is a disgusting industry of really sick people. Yeah. I think anyone who's in entertainment and any aspect of it can tell you that. It's a lot of creeps.
Yeah.
And I stopped doing comedy because I just didn't want to be around those people anymore.
Yeah.
We're here doing a podcast.
Yes. Exactly. Right?
So, controlling that. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying anything even that bad happened to me, but I'm the kind of person who I'm like, okay, I see where, like, I get it. I see where this is going. Like, I just don't want to be around this kind of environment. But for those people who were stronger than I am or more, you know, had the goals that they wanted, compelled them to be in these arenas, they had to deal with this stuff. And it probably has made diminished their careers because, you know, if you complain about a man, we all know this.
Yeah.
If you complain about something, especially in a comedy setting, you'll never get booked again.
Yeah.
You know, like if word gets out, you're not easy or you're giving people a hard time or whatever. This is how it is. It's a dirty business. Mm-hmm. But his apology is not going to do anything about that.
Yeah.
And it seems like it wasn't a tiny amount of people. And you have to remember, too, that if he's been doing this for a long time.
There's years of this that have been going
and
on.
There's and these are young women.
Yeah.
You're already in a vulnerable situation, a young woman coming into the comedy world, mm-hmm. you know, especially 10 years ago, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. when you couldn't really do anything. When nobody would listen to you. They'd be like, wow, what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. These are comics or whatever. So what is his apology worth to me? Nothing. I could care less. The best thing that could happen now is that he not make any more money and that his career is ruined.
Yeah.
That's all. I think that's good.
Yeah, because he's always going to have people who
yep.
like him.
Mm-hmm.
He has his money.
Yeah.
And you know what? And he's old enough now that he doesn't need to, like, he already got to have the
He won.
Joy.
He did it.
He did, yeah.
He won.
He had a big career. He got to do what he wanted.
Everybody loves him. He's making shitloads of money. He had more creative freedom than a lot of people. He had his own show. I mean, how many people get to do this?
Yeah.
You know, so an apology? I don't think so. Anyway, that's my tirade on that.
Good. I like it.
I'm more than happy to hear from people who disagree with me. It's one of the arguments against the way that I feel about this kind of stuff. And people say, well, you carry a lot of hate with you. It's like, no, I don't. I actually don't care. I'm quite happy with it.
Yeah.
Right? Like.
Yeah, I'm naturally not feeling anything.
No, I'm just saying, hey, you know, you reap, you know, for those of you out here, the Christians, you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
You know, and no apology is going to change the things that he did. Like, really getting your dick out and forcing somebody to look at you while you do it. And people, I've read some stuff too, where people are like, he could have hired women to be with him. Have you ever been in his presence? Let me know if you're a woman and you're attracted to him, really.
Yeah, right.
You know, come on. Really? He seems like a pair of sweatpants.
Yeah, like dirty sweatpants.
Yeah, like dirty sweatpants.
In human form.
Yeah, that you're like, why are you in the club in sweatpants?
Yeah, right.
That kind of thing. All right, so Michael F. Thank you.
And yes, we have more Michael F.
Yeah.
We will
meet those out. There was too much Michael F. for one podcast.
Yes. We have to PC way out.
Yeah.
We can
but
spread
thank
the Michael
you.
F. around.
Because everybody gets some.
Yeah.
A little here, a little there. So I have a creepy robot thing, because Katie and I are always talking about the robo-apocalypse.
Yes.
And it's upon us.
Oh,
it's probably happening now.
Hardcore.
And as we always say, it's not us, robot overlords.
Yeah, right.
We're with you.
Yeah, we're with you. Robot overlords.
Yeah. We're using a robot right now to make this podcast, in a sense. One of your early cousins.
Yeah.
So this is a team from the Free University of Brussels, and I wonder if it's free as in, like, liberal, or if it's free as in, like, they don't have to pay, has made a robot capable of working together with its siblings.
No robots have a sibling.
I know, that's what it says there. I underlined that. To make a larger robot. So these are little teeny tiny robots. I'll show you the picture.
Okay.
They're teeny tiny robots. They look like they're probably around the size of a quarter.
Little cutie pies.
Yeah, except that these robots can work together to form a gigantic robot.
Yeah.
Like, as a team. So they're like little cells. In order to accomplish the task, the robots must collaborate autonomously and elect one of their own as the leader.
How do they do that? Because if they're all made the same, then what makes them
I have no idea. I feel the same way about people. How do we elect a leader? Obviously, poorly.
Yeah.
Once combined, the merged robots share the equivalent of a single brain and a single robotic nervous system. That sounds like a mob to me. By adopting a modular approach, robots with different capabilities, shapes, and sizes could, in theory, reconstruct and reconfigure themselves as required. Say the authors of a paper on mergeable robots published in Nature. So they're called swarm robots.
Okay.
So I'm just imagining a bunch of robots getting together. You try to smash it, which is my default, with your
that's
foot.
That's your go-to move against a robot.
And they move around in the shape of a foot. Like, they clear the space around my foot.
Yeah.
Then when I lift my foot up, they go back together again. So they basically...
Yeah, they can sense your foot coming down. Yeah,
and they move.
Yeah.
They're like, shape of the negative of a foot.
Yeah.
Don't get smashed. So, of course, they're calling them kilobots.
I don't like that.
Which is terrible. They mean kilo, like 1,000.
Yeah, I know, like the kilo.
Or kilobots, yeah.
But kilo...
Yep. They move in unison.
It's an easy word to say. That means a lot of something else.
Yeah. They move in unison. They make shapes and patterns. It says controversially, and I'm not surprised. Guess who's using this?
Who?
The military.
Yeah.
They're using dozens or hundreds of small unmanned systems that work in unison. Would be extremely difficult to thwart.
Yeah, because they go under the door cracks.
Mm-hmm. And then they
reassemble.
But where's the glory in that, I say, in your war? Really? Like, how are they going to get people to do this? It says biological collectives involve enormous numbers of cooperating entities. Whether you think of it as cells or insects or animals, they work together to accomplish a simple task, and that magnitude is beyond the scale of an individual. I'm just imagining horrors for this. I feel like when a group of anything gets together and elects a leader.
Only that electing a leader, but when any group of anything gets together, they get that mind thing.
That hive mind.
Yeah.
And they forget about,
that cattle mentality.
Yeah, like maybe.
The lemmings.
The people who thought something wasn't such a good idea, they're like, yeah, maybe it's okay.
Yeah.
These guys are doing it.
Mindlessly. It's like crossing the street. Like when someone starts moving, you go.
Everybody goes.
And then you're like, wait a minute.
Why am I here? Yeah.
Did I look? No.
So it says, University of Brussels team has taken swarm robots to a new level. They link up together. The big problem that they have to overcome was how a collective system would be controlled once they're operating as a single entity. So they haven't even thought this through. They have figured out a way for all these robots to get together and elect a leader, and they didn't think about how they control that leader.
Oh.
Wah, wah.
Well, I mean, obviously we're doing the same thing.
Yes. That's why it's so, like, all. Whenever I read something about robots, I feel like they're taking the worst instincts of humanity.
And putting it in electric form. Yep.
Something that doesn't have feelings, that is supposedly going to be set up for that. So on the back of that, if I may, since I'm on this robot thing, I found this article that we talked about this before, the three laws of robotics Isaac Asimov. So one, a robot may not injure or harm a human being, or through an action allow a human being to come to harm.
Okay.
Two, a robot must obey orders given by human beings, except where such orders conflict with the first law. So
you can't order
to kill. Three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. So this is from Isaac Asimov's iRobot.
Okay.
And it's a fiction, but it's transferred over to reality. A lot of people think these are the rules. I like them. They're fine.
They're fine laws.
Yeah.
And every society has laws for everything. Go ahead.
So these are fine. And the whole point of these and the story is to stop robots from becoming killer robots.
Yeah.
And to stop robots from allowing people to be injured.
Right.
But there's a guy out here at NYU who's saying that they want to empower robots. So they want a law, like, empowerment as replacement for the three laws of robotics. So it's the idea that the robot should be look out for its own empowerment and then look out for the empowerment of other robots. So it's a concept inspired by cybernetics and psychology. And the question is always, whose psychology?
Yeah.
Right?
This is
this is where we...
No, they you should know? Not. No, not.
Which psychology? Like the psychology that
not develop a robot that is empowered to take care of its.
But is using. I mean, you did psychology.
Yeah,
I'm sure when you were doing psychology, you learned about what they thought 60 years ago in psychology and how crazy some of those things were.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea that gay is a sickness and it can be cured.
Right, the Kinsey study that went on. It was just like somebody, first of all, people studying sex. And then what they were uncovering, it was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, this has been going on since there are human beings. You're just
interpreting it now?
Yeah, just putting names to it.
And sometimes poorly.
And categorizing it. And
now you're saying this is the way it is.
Yeah.
So they say here... empowerment is a concept with cybernetics and psychology describes an agent's intrinsic motivation to both persist within and operate on its environment. Like an organism, it wants to survive and it wants to be able to affect the world. We should not be creating anything that's a robot that thinks this way.
No, not at all.
Because whose idea of it affect the world in what way?
You know what this makes me think of? Like the idea, some men are very jealous that women can actually give life.
Can conceive.
Yeah. And that's the one thing that a man cannot do, no matter all things equal in men and women.
Yeah.
Men cannot actually
you cannot
carry
do that.
A baby.
Yeah, not yet.
So maybe this is their idea of a baby.
This is a terrible baby. This baby is awful. So he's trying to couch it by saying, well, maybe robots will treat us like our dogs do. So the dogs look out for themselves, but they also look out for us first. So your dog...
I don't know about that.
That's like some dogs.
Yeah.
So it says here... And this is where it gets scary. This guy has studied human machine social interactions, and he wondered what would happen if an empowered agent, so in a robot that feels empowered, also looked out for the empowerment of another. You just don't want your robot to stay operational. You also want it to maintain that for a human partner. So now this robot is supposed to be anticipating what's going to be good for me and making sure that it happens. I think it's totally crazy. I just sort of want to bring it up that someone is trying to subvert the, trying to change these three laws, which I think are pretty good and they're basic. And they say the problem with these laws is that they're based on language and that they're not cut and dry. But neither is anything based on psychology.
Yeah.
So I don't know where this is going to go.
I mean,
if you're an evil person and you have a robot cares about you, aren't they going to do evil things?
To other people.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of like the women who voted for Trump, right?
Yeah.
They were looking out for their men.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
You know?
And not looking out for themselves.
And not looking out for themselves or other people.
Yeah.
So, anyway, good luck, robot apocalypse. Yeah. I'm glad we're old.
Yes.
Hey, you know it is a free podcast, free of charge, FOC.
Free as a bird, free falling even. Well, it's free for listeners.
We put a lot of hard work into this.
Editing and online hosting is, frankly, thirsty work. It gets pretty dry in this studio, and you know we love a tasteful white wine. If you like our style... consider buying a gal a drink. We've added a PayPal donation button to heyyouknowit.com so you can show us some love with a one-time or recurring donation to cover a little something from the vine.
For $5, you'll be hooking us up with a happy hour glass of tasteful white wine, a 4-ounce pour. For a 10 spot, we can split a bottle of wine from the bodega across the street. For $15, we can kick it with a jug because who are we kidding? For $25, you'll be making our dreams come true with a box of tasteful white wine concealed with a Mylar skin. Box of wine.
Well, I have a live show review.
Oh, yes. Awesome.
Yes. So, Jaquetta and I both love live theater.
We sure do.
Yes. And I went last night to a show called Dudes Being Dudes. Being Dudes.
This is our friend who's been on the podcast before, friend of the podcast, Lauren Mall.
Yes.
Who was her character?
Scott Talent.
Scott Talent. America's
Scott Talent.
Exactly.
So, Lauren Mall, a funny lady. Endlessly
she does
creative.
It all.
She does everything. She is amazing.
And she's invited us to be dudes on Dudes Being
yes,
Dudes. We
yes.
haven't done it yet.
So this is a show, basically, it's stand-up comedy, but all the performers are women or people who are gay, dressed in male drag.
So they're doing bro.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No, it's male drag.
Awesome.
You see. And then all the performers have developed their own comedy personas. So, and you get up there and the misogyny is rampant. So
are they comics being comics? Doing comedy?
Yes.
Ah, I love it.
Yes, or not. Or they're performers.
Okay.
Or they're improvisers. They're actors
okay.
that have developed and written their own characters.
Nice.
Based on it. So, oh my God. The funniest show I've ever seen.
This is how you can enjoy some misogyny, people, if you must.
This is, and this is where the real theater is, people. These are very talented people getting up in the back room of some little bar in Brooklyn somewhere.
Yes.
Terrible little space. I mean, it's fine space. It's, you know, just a hole in the wall space.
Yeah.
And you have gems of comedy in front of you in this little tiny room. I laughed so hard. It was the funniest, most creative thing I've ever seen.
This is a monthly show, people, so you have an opportunity to see Dudes Being Dudes.
DudesBeingDudesBeingDudes.com. Look it up. So we got, to give you more of an idea, there was a woman who got up and did like a Chris Rock-esque kind of delivery.
Okay.
So imagine that.
Mm-hmm. You know, old Chris Rock before he got rich.
There was like kind of like a Dane Cook-ish kind of like.
Ooh, so that wasn't funny.
Yeah, but doing the misogyny comedy.
Whatever happened to Dane Cook?
I don't know. Then so there were the names were like Littlefoot.
Nice.
Littlefoot, Open Mic Dave.
Oh.
Who was a gay man who got up there, but was acting as a straight man.
Dave was his character.
Dave was open. Doing the comedy. And then there was Bro Joey, who was more of like an Andrew Dice Clay kind of a guy.
He's from New Jersey.
Yeah. And
Bro-y.
It was the funniest show.
I'm so upset. I never get to see that show because I have class.
Abby Crutchfield got up.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yep. She got up there and did her thing. It was a very futuristic character named James, who had the appearance of a woman but was a man.
I love it.
And it was brilliant and smart and funny. And so we're all there laughing and enjoying this whole thing. But who wandered in but a real live
An actual dude.
An actual dude.
Did he know what was going on?
He didn't know what was going on. He thought he was walking into some stand-up comedy and was like,
instead of performance art.
Yeah. And so he sat there.
That's always fun.
He was kind of drunk. And he was like at the punchlines of the jokes, which were meant that were misogynistic. He's like, yeah.
Oh, like, he was the best part of the show. That's when you know you've done well.
Yes. So the performers, you know, singled him out a little bit.
Of course. They
called him Bud Light because that's what he was drinking.
Oh, I love it. See, this is how you people fight back with comedy.
Yeah.
What a great show. Lauren Mall is amazing. You should definitely check her out.
This lineup, I wish. This is comedy.
Yeah.
This is performance.
This is performance. Talent. Yeah. And you're not going to see it.
You're never going to see it
on TV. That's fantastic. Yeah. We have got to do some dudes. If anyone has any idea what kind of dudes we should do, please let us know. heyyouknow@gmail.com. Yeah. What kind of dude would you like to see?
Yes.
Well, you know?
I can see Jaquetta being like the guy in the monochromatic suit.
Oh my goodness. Sold. I don't know what kind of dude I can see. Yeah. I have to think about that.
I know. I have to think. I've been thinking about it because Lauren said we could get up and do it.
Okay. Well, okay. We're going to do that at some point.
All right.
Dudes being dudes, huh? I love it.
Yeah.
This is some barnyard news. Barnyard news is a segment where we find news of animals that live in the barnyard and animals that don't live in the barnyard. This is creepy. It's a giant coconut crab. So these things are in the Chagos Islands. In the Indian Ocean. And there was a researcher down there studying giant crabs. Mm-hmm. It's called the coconut or robber crab. And they can weigh up to 4 kilograms and be up to 1 meter wide.
All right.
So pretty big.
That's big.
So crabs typically are thought of as scavengers.
Yeah.
Right? They go around if something is dead, bottom feeders. But they have now seen that this robber crab has been hunting and killing seabirds that have been nesting on branches that are low.
It comes up out of the water.
According to the researcher, the crab climbed a tree and attacked a seabird in its nest that was on a branch close to the ground. The crab broke the bird's wing, causing it to fall out of the nest. Then it took the bird with its claw, breaking the other wing. Then it called his buddies like, hey! And a bunch of crabs showed up and ate the shit out of it.
No.
How crazy is that? To which I say,
the crab eats the bird.
It killed it.
It turns the tables.
Yeah.
Because the birds usually go down and get
Not these guys. Home. And I said, this Darwin Award right here.
No
this
kidding.
Is the crab is up in the ante. His bird game is strong. The bird on the other side, you know, first prize for the bird in the Darwin Award is you got eaten by a crab, son. What were you? You're a bird. What were you doing?
Wings. You should have flown.
Why weren't you on the top anyway? You lazy POS.
Oh, I just want to, because I, you know, yeah, I just like to...
low-hanging fruit, you know?
I just want to go flop to the ground and then walk.
Yeah. I don't want to have to go all the way down the tree, around the corner of the bodega. I'm just going to roll out of bed.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, too bad.
They said once the bird was unable to move, the other crabs arrived and pulled it apart in a scene that the researchers described as gruesome.
Yeah, I would too.
Coconut crabs are the largest land-dwelling invertebrates, 4 kilograms, 1 meter wide.
Yeah, you don't have to be a researcher to pull that gruesome.
Yes. They are common in coral atolls in the Indian Pacific Ocean and can be the largest animal in their environments. So they're in small, you know, outcroppings of land or small atolls or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of birds that come to these areas to nest specifically. And they had come up, further research goes on to confirming the hypothesis that these crabs might make birds think twice about nesting in an area.
Yeah,
and generally, where you see there are a lot of crabs, there are fewer birds, and vice versa. Really? I'm glad you figured that out with your university degree. This bird obviously was just like, you know, whatever, what's the difference?
And I bet you they were bro researchers who high-fived each other after they came up with that.
Yes. Little would we find out.
Crabs.
I was in Maine a week ago, and we were reading about lobsters. I'm fascinated by them. Apparently, they can grow up to 5 feet in length. People, I'm 5 feet in length. How scary is that?
That's incredibly
huge
scary.
Huge claws. Maine. You won't see them, because they're deep, like, in the trenches of the ocean and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, still.
But still.
They want to come out.
I mean, even a 3-foot lobster is something I don't want to meet, because the claw... The claw is massive already.
Yeah.
And imagine if something that's like 3, 4, 5 feet big. No, thank you. So crabs are hunting birds now. This is what we've come to. Barnyard news. All right, what do you have? There's a lot of gravity to the ending of that, right?
Yes.
I felt like I was like an angry conservative. Like, the war on crabs is over.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're taking back the oceans and
we're taking back atolls in the Chago Islands today.
Well, I have Tales from the Campfire.
Ooh, Tales from Dear Campfire is a segment where we find tales on the internet of the paranormal, fake lore, folklore, ghost stories, scary stuff. And we tell it here around the digital campfire, so.
Gather around, listeners.
Yes.
All right. So, Ouija board experience in school?
Yes.
Anyone?
Yes.
All right.
I'll take it.
Okay. This is from the United Kingdom.
Okay.
Me and my friends have been fascinated with the paranormal for a long while, and it sounds stupid, but we kind of want scary things to happen.
That's not stupid. It's fun.
Yeah, just to prove that there is something more to life.
Wow. This is young people who are like, oh, there's got to be more to life than this.
Yeah. This is it.
Yeah. Not even a haunting.
I need something scary to happen.
Yeah, today.
So we had to come to school on a Saturday to do some math study sessions. And when it ended, one of my friends, let's call him Gary.
Okay. No. There's no one named Gary. I'm sorry.
Suggested we do a Ouija board outside the school library.
Okay.
It all sounds rash, but we...
No, it doesn't. Their lives are boring. You know?
But we research on things like this, so we were prepared, I guess. So, we all sat in the secluded area outside the library, and Gary drew up the Ouija board on a piece of paper.
Old school.
Yeah, right?
That's when the shit comes out.
Get Gary to do it, because he is good at shit.
That's the last we ever heard of Gary.
We heard that any form of boards work. Then the people involved was me, Gary, and another friend. Let's call her Ramona.
Okay, sure.
I'm making up names.
Barbara.
I'm making Cheryl. Up names in case they aren't comfortable being revealed online.
Yeah, we know that.
All right. Before we start, we all said a prayer for protection and put our hands on a guitar pick, which we used as a pointer.
Awesome.
The guitar pick is tiny. How do they put their hands
on it? You know what?
It?
Some in substance. Let's go. Ooh. It sounds good. They're trying to do it.
After a few deep breaths, Ramona asked, are there any spirits wanting to communicate? The pick moved to yes.
Okay.
Although, throughout the whole thing, I was convinced it was Gary or Ramona, but they swore it wasn't them.
It was only three of them.
Yeah.
So maybe they each had, like, one finger on.
Well, that's still a guitar pick you put in your
two
fingers.
They're very slender, right. Gary and Ramona.
Then I asked for the spirit's name, and it spelled out T-E-D.
Is that the real name? Or is that the name to protect the spirit, because they may or may not be comfortable with it? You know,
spirit may not want to be named online.
Yeah.
From then on, we addressed it as Ted. One of us asked if it was friendly, and the pick went to yes. After that, we asked more questions, but there was no response from Ted. Suddenly, the pick started moving really fast towards goodbye.
Wow.
They're boring.
Yes, that's right.
We were slightly upset to hear Ted wanted to go, but we bade him goodbye politely.
They should have drawn, like, a peace out on there, so you could have gone to that.
Yeah, right. I don't really know what to think. It seems immature using a guitar pick and paper, but it did seem to work. I felt a presence, but it wasn't threatening. It was almost like talking to a shy little boy.
Okay.
It was weird, because when we asked questions, me and my friends all seemed to stare at one area to our right without noticing, as if we knew he were there. Just wanted to share this little experience I had. Do you think my school could be haunted? I find it unlikely, as it was built quite recently, 2007.
Mm-hmm. Why does that mean it's not haunted?
Yeah. It was a brand new secondary school, and we are the oldest in the school.
This is cute. They're like 8th graders.
We're the oldest in the school, although we're like 15, 16.
Oh, okay. So they're high
But I don't know how to explain Ted. Any suggestions? So.
Well, if it's like most TED Talks, it's boring and nonsensical.
I know, right? That's what I was like.
But I like their story. I love that they DIY'd it. Because this is the thing with, we all had the same Ouija board that you could buy. Mm-hmm. Like the.
Oh, I didn't. We didn't have one. No, we weren't allowed.
It was like a board game.
Yeah, I remember.
A Ouija board can be anything.
Yeah.
You know? And the window just shook. Did someone come in? That was weird.
Oh, I hate that when that happens.
I know. We always get freaked out. And on that note, good day.
Good day. Bye.
If you don't hear from us again, heyyouknow@gmail.com.
Right.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks.